Welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Carlton Gibson, and I'm here with Will Vincent.
Hello.
Hello. Today, we're going to talk about how you learn Django and what that involves. So, Will, how do you learn Django?
Yeah, well, let's tee this up slightly with our background. So, you know, you are the one of two current Django fellows. I teach Django for a living. I think the challenge with Django is people are coming at it at different levels. So we'll try to address all of those, whether you're a total beginner and you've never programmed before, or maybe you know Python but not web development, or if you're coming from a different web framework and you just want to know what's different about Django. So assuming you're a total beginner, I would say I would not just start with Django. I would start with HTML and CSS and building some static pages. Personally, I think it's too much to jump right into web development. That's what I would do. I'd build a bunch of static pages, very briefly kind of understand how that is. One of the big questions is, how much Python do you need to know before you jump into Django? And this is one where I think my opinion, you'll hear very different things on this. So I think you don't need to know that much. I think it's important to build things and backfill. And so I think it's good to go through some basic Python exercises, and more is better. But I think you can kind of just jump into Django and build some quick stuff and feel that power, and then backfill. I don't think you need to have 2 years of Python experience beforehand. What do you think about that, Carlton? I think that's probably the biggest one, is how much Python do you need to know before you jump into Django?
Well, Python could be, like, assuming you know a bit of HTML and CSS, so you can build a basic web page, right? If you know that much, then you could actually learn the dynamic, the programming bit, the Python bit, by just getting started with Django.
Yes, I completely agree.
You wouldn't understand anything, but
yeah, it's
could go through some tutorials, you could copy and paste a bit, you could learn a bit, and you'd be creating views, you'd be using templates, you'd be using the ORM, you'd be creating some models, you'd create the admin, but you do these things, and it would slowly start to come together, but you could literally go from knowing nothing, yeah. And Django would be a great way into Python if you didn't.
I agree, because I think knowledge. You know, with Python, some people get excited about, you know, doing the Fibonacci sequence or, you know, calculating prime numbers, and that's like the computer science types, and God bless them. But most people don't care about that. They don't get a thrill out of outputting stuff to the command line. They want to build something real. And so I agree, Django is a good way to use Python in a practical way. You know, I've had this debate with other people, because there's more, you know, people typically with a computer science degree who say, I think it's even, what's his name, Jeff Knupp has a post saying learning Django through Python is considered dangerous, where he advocates not doing this. And I disagree. I think his point is you're going to learn bad practices, learn the basics first. But, you know, it's hard to learn the basics when you don't have any context. And Django is one of the best ways to have context, because you're actually building something real, not fiddling around with calculating mathematics.
Yeah.
So it's a question of, I think it's a question of ordering, right? Like, you need all of this. The question is, how do you get all of that knowledge, and how do you do it in a way that you stay interested? Because if you just dive into all the abstract stuff without context, it's really hard to stick around, and it's not that interesting. And even though you learn it, you're not learning it in the same way. Like learning about databases, you can learn all the theory, but it's not the same as having built a site and feeling the problems, and then like you're having your mind blown of like, oh, I was struggling with this problem. Here's this amazing solution. When someone just gives it to you, it doesn't sink in, or you don't get it.
Yeah, and like people who went to university and did a computer science degree, they already knew how to code when they got there, right? They may not have been the world's best programmer. They may not have known data structures or the insides of a binary tree or any of those things, but they already were computer literate. When somebody coming to programming from the real world, they've got a job to do. So they either want to do some statistics, which they need to get out slightly further than Excel, or they need to build a website or a web application, in which case, to get going with Django, it's just perfect. And you don't need to know SQL, because you've got the ORM, and that's a nice way in. And yeah, later on, you'll need to know about indexes and about joins and about how you can optimize queries, because if your application gets any traffic, which most applications won't, because they're in their corporate internal things or whatever.
Yeah, but that's like telling someone their baby is ugly. I mean, they hear it and they don't hear it.
Yeah, but you don't need to know about, you know, even select related usage in the ORM or any of these advanced topics until your application has a problem.
Yeah, I agree. It's the step-by-step sequence, and the best way is to feel the problem to learn it. And, you know, what you said about university, I want to add, you know, I think one of the reasons why computer science scares a lot of people is because so many people come in with years of programming experience and, okay, they don't know data structures, but, you know, maybe they've built sites with PHP or something else for years. And so, you know, half the class has that background, half the class maybe is just taking it for the first time, and they just feel stupid because it's one of the only, you know, disciplines where you have such a disconnect in experience, right? You don't have that with organic chemistry in the same way. So, you know, that's a separate pedagogical thing. But I think one of the reasons why computer science is really scary is, you know, they hit you with the fundamentals course, you jump right into data structures and algorithms, and, you know, at least half the class has years of experience on you, and it's already a hard course for them. So it's, I really wish there was maybe a two-track system, like you're actually a beginner versus, you know, you've played around with stuff for a while, because a lot of people, you know, you internalize and you think, well, I'm stupid or I don't get it. And that's really not the case. But that's a separate discussion we can have.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the computer science stuff comes, okay, it's great. If you're going to study computer science, that's an awesome way to go about it. But if you are a jobbing person in the real world trying to get something built, you don't need any of that. You can just start putting stuff together. And yeah, there'll be performance problems and all sorts, but deal with those later on.
Yeah, learn by doing, for sure. Let's just start off. What are some of the good resources? This is a good question for people. How do you learn Django? I mean, I typically tell people, you know, if I don't know their background, I say, go try the official Poles tutorial, which is really good. But I would say it's at the intermediate level. It's for someone who's new to Django, but not new to web development. So I typically say, try that out. If you get it, boom, off to the races, jump in the documentation. It's really going to work for you. If it doesn't work for you, and for a lot of people it doesn't because they don't know web development or the shell is scary, all these sorts of things, then I recommend dropping down a level and saying, you know, Django Girls has a great tutorial. I've got a bunch of great tutorials on my personal site, you know, Django for Beginners. So I think that's a good way to level set. But, you know, I tell people that tutorial is not for total beginners.
Yeah, it's like on the Python website, the Python tutorial.
Yeah.
It kind of, you couldn't learn programming from that if that was your first exposure. If you know another programming language, then it's great because it explains data types and the data model and what's unique about Python. But it's not a Python for beginners.
No. And I mean, I think because I've thought a lot about this over the years, I think there's two factors. One is that when you're writing that, you know, it's more interesting to write to your peers. So the person who wrote the Poles tutorial initially, the person who wrote that Python one, you know, they are an experienced engineer. So they're sort of explaining it as they would explain to maybe a junior developer. I don't think they have talked to a total beginner recently. And it's also just a lot more work to do stuff for total beginners. I mean, I always say I start from the beginning. I never leave out a step. So I say, like, literally, here's how we create the directory for our code. Here's the text editor. And it seems mundane. It's not interesting for me to write, but you lose so many people right off the bat when you just jump in. You know, and I'll give an example. The Django documentation, I don't think mentions virtual environments anywhere. So I'm pretty sure if it does now, it didn't in the past. So, you know, which is, it's not Django's fault per se, but for example, when I started using Django, I just jumped in and then I got all sorts of weird bugs because I didn't know Python very well. And then later I was like, oh, I wish I'd known about virtual environments. So, you know, the Django docs can't do everything for you, but I think what is the step-by-step process for someone who comes in? I mean, so I always say, before that, install Python 3, which is its own challenge, actually. That's a huge stumbling block, which, yes, you know, JavaScript doesn't have.
It's a huge stumbling block for people who are really new to programming, to this kind of stuff. And it's like, what's not appreciated, I think, is quite how difficult non-programmers find those first steps, because it's cryptic error messages and it's slightly different version numbers, and
yeah,
the information overload is already so high that people just get stuck.
Yeah, you can't even start. I mean, on and I'll link to it. I have tutorials on how to do it on Mac, Windows, and Chromebook, and those get massive traffic. Those are the top posts on my site, which gets a fair amount of traffic. You know, down the line, I'd like to do a YouTube thing where I take a fresh computer and do these installs. But the challenge with that is, if you ask an engineer, there's multiple ways to install Python. And they will say, oh, you could do this, you could do that, you could do this. I mean, you go to the official Python site and it's like, oh, just download the binary, you know.
What's a binary?
You know, yeah.
I Where mean, do I put
beginners,
it? And how do I install it? And what does it mean when it says, when it the box comes up and says, would you like me to add this to path? Sorry, what's path?
Yeah.
Why is it all capital letters? And like, how on earth would I understand what that even meant?
Right. What's path? What's command line? You know, so I'll link to those posts, but I think I have empathy for that because I went through that and I think a lot of people mistake how hard that is to set up. You know, because we, you know, as a professional, you sort of set it up and you forget about it, or you internalize how hard it is to set it up. But even
you forget the hours that you spent banging on a screen that wasn't working without knowing why, and the Googling that you did to find the answers, and the years of doing that over and over and over again. You forget that. You tell yourself that that didn't exist or something because it was so scarring. But beginners have that experience every single time they try.
Yeah. And I you know, I always tell people, find someone who's a beginner and just ask them, show them how to install Python 3 and watch what happens. I mean, I just had that somewhat recently. Someone, I work at a co-working space, and I was like, oh yeah, he doesn't know how to code. I was like, you can just download my book. You know, let's jump in. And he's on Windows. And, you know, it took me an hour to set up his computer for it. And, you know, he never would have gotten started.
Yeah, so we were at DjangoCon last year and talking to somebody who wanted to partake in the sprints. And I'm like, oh, you know, you just download Django, pip install the create a virtual environment, pip install the requirements, run the test suite. So he's like, yeah, look, I've done all this and it doesn't work. Look, cool, some cryptic error message. And he's like, oh, no. So we sat there all lunchtime fixing that.
Yeah, well.
And we're experts.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Well, and that's, yeah, it's. Well, and that, you know, virtual environments too. I mean, there's pip, there's pipenv, there's venv. You know, that's a whole other. So I think, you know, again, I'll provide links. I think for beginners, don't overwhelm them. Just give them something that works. You know, you just need something that works. So, you know, as experts, I don't care if it, you know, if I have a choice, I like pipenv, but I don't care if it's pip. I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter to me. It's whatever someone started the project uses. But as a beginner, just got to blast through that stuff.
Get up and running. I mean, this is the thing, is how can we get to the point where Django admin start project works?
Right. Well, and this is
as
this
quickly
is the pyramid,
as possible.
Right. Well, and I think of this is the pyramid of learning how to code, where the base is, and it's just way more things than people think about. It the base is typing. You have to be able to type proficiently and not have that be a barrier. Then you need command line and navigating your computer. You know, I think about how to make that interesting for people. I just taught something recently. I taught over lunchtime a bunch of people how to build and deploy a website in an hour, which you can do. And, you know, the file system, the directory structure, even though it was visual, I was saying, you know, put this on your desktop, or if you're on Windows, your home thing. You know, people have never had to do that. And so we didn't even use the command line.
Yeah.
And still just finding files, you know, naming files, right? I said, don't capitalize them, don't have spaces, you know, but I say it and, you know, they need to make the mistake to see it. There's just so many things. So you have to navigate the command line. Then you get to a programming language, assuming you can install it. Then you get to a web framework, and then you have, you know, you have databases and you have security and templates and HTML, CSS, JavaScript. So, you know, it's an unsolved problem, but it's a pyramid of stuff. Like,
and you think, we'll just get going. Just open the terminal. And then you're presented with Bash, right? And it's like, Bash is great and it's lovely, but there is arcane knowledge beyond arcane knowledge involved in using Bash.
Yeah, and yet
probably.
It's
and
like,
yet people have, CD, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, even though it's, you know, 6-8 commands is almost everything you're going to use, it's super scary to people.
Yeah.
And you can nuke your computer. You know, I always actually show people, I'll show them the, you know, I forget off the top of my head. I think it's in the book too. Actually, I'll say, like, if you ever see this, you know, to like sudo, you know,
rf star, yeah.
Like, do not do that. It's really a scary thing. Anyway, so there's a lot to learn with Django. I think install Python, just jump right in. And
yeah. So the other
there
the,
are
you,
resources to
you
do
mentioned
it.
Two tutorials. You mentioned the Django tutorial and the Django Girls tutorial. The other one that's very good is the Django REST framework tutorial. It's nice and simple, nice and low level. You know, relatively speaking, it's equally low level as these other things. But if you were to go through those three tutorials and be able to do them. You would know a lot, actually. And you would be able to then build a web application.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so it was not that long ago that I was learning Django REST framework, and I had trouble with the official tutorial because I think it's again, maybe it's me, but I think it's also a little bit at that intermediate level, which is why, you know, so I've written a bunch of a little bit lower level tutorials that are sort of, you know, again, try that one, try the official one. If you can get through it, great. If not, there are some resources. So we'll link to all that. And there's a number of YouTube channels that are growing up that I link to in my awesome Django repo. So it's getting a lot better, but there's not that much, right? There's not that many Udacity courses. I mean, it's always kind of mind-blowing to me that Django is as popular as it is, and yet it's woefully underserved by educational content.
But I don't think it's better for other, you know, it's that barrier to entry to programming full stop. Like we're just not a computer literate culture yet.
Well, and I think a lot of people learn, you know, people learn on the job. So, you know, yeah, historically you would get, you know, you'd grind through a computer science degree and you'd have all this abstract knowledge, but you don't know how to code. You don't know how to do web. I mean, many of the readers of my book are undergraduate, graduate students in computer science at very good schools. They just are never taught this.
Yeah, because it's all C and Java and stuff.
C and Java. And, you know, I understand. I mean, you basically have to be an adjunct to teach web stuff. It changes so rapidly. And I've taught it as an adjunct. You know, the challenge is I love teaching at the college level. I'd love to do more of it. It's giving my time away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the only way you can really do it is if you're a practitioner at a company and the company will compensate you for your time and you use that time to hire the best students. That's about the only way, or you're financially set. Because, I mean, the amount of money that you make it's not even close.
Yeah, okay.
So that's right. a separate discussion. But it's a challenging thing because...
But that's because there's a skill shortage, right? So the market for people who... Presumably you can code if you can teach coding. I mean, I know teaching and doing it are not the same thing, but you must be able to code to be able to teach code at some level. But the market for working coders is much more competitive than the market for teachers, teaching of code.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good problem in a way, but it is a problem... That's a whole separate. That's a whole
still a massive skill shortage.
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. But I think it's
economics or whatnot.
Yeah, but certainly with practical stuff, so data science, web stuff, it's rare that a tenured professor is up to date on them because that's not what they do, and yet that's what students, you know, people in the real world will jump in and do. So there's a disconnect there.
But that's always the disconnect between academia and industry, right? In every field.
But it doesn't have to be like that. But yeah.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Ivory Towers.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll save the philosophy for a different...
Okay, so moving on. So what's challenging about Django? So I think the biggest one, once you've gotten into it, is this idea of four things for one page. So you need a model, a view, a URL, and a template for your average page. And so that's, you know, four things for one page. The order doesn't really matter. You kind of need them all at once. So that's a big stumbling block I see with people is they'll say, well, you know, what order do you do them in? It's hard to be iterative on that because things will just break in different ways. And eventually you learn to know the error messages and see, oh, I forgot this. And then eventually you just know that I need a model, I need a view, I need a template, and I need a URL. And I don't see any consistency among experts on the order in which they do that. I mean, you know, for me, I would probably would go model, URL, view, template, but not always. I don't know what your take is on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I almost always start with the model. So yeah. I create a model. This is what I want to save. These are the kind of data I want to save. And then I'm thinking about the URLs that I want to use, you know, that if I want to create a list view, what would the URL be for that? And these kind of goes together. And then I might create a REST framework serializer or a form that goes around it. So, because I'm thinking about the fields and what type of data that wants to save. And almost instantly I'll create an admin so that I can start playing with it in the admin. I can create model instances. I can see it. And then, okay, I'll create the view.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, and serializers, we'll do a separate thing on how to learn Django REST framework because it's basically all about serializers, but that'll be a separate thing. But I agree. I mean, you start with the model, think about the URLs, and then admin. But it's just something you just need reps. You just need to build a bunch of sites. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, same thing with, you know, learning like React in particular. It just, at some point it clicks and you sort of like, oh, why was that hard? But that's a huge one that people teaching others don't necessarily see. And it's the ordering, which makes sense. You know, which order do we do? It's like, well, it doesn't really matter.
Well, it depends. I mean, you might do it template driven, because if you've got a clear design about what it's to look like, you might say, well, okay, so quite often in freelance contracting work, in agency work, you get given a very rich comp, like a Photoshop comp of what the site's to look like. And so you start with templates.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, what are actually the data fields? And you start extracting the model from the templates. And you ask, you know, if you were to ask the designers for a model or a JSON schema or something, they wouldn't be able to give it to you.
I think,
because it's not their skill set.
I think that's...
And so you have to extract those in that sense.
Yeah, I think that's changing a bit. But traditionally that's the barriers of entry, or the barriers between the two disciplines. And I would say, you know, this seems overwhelming. The way to think about it is, there's really only three types of page you're going to have, which is represented by a generic class-based view. You either are listing information, so you're a blog, you're listing all the blogs. You have a detail view, which is an individual blog post. Or you have a template view, which is a static thing that isn't driven by a model, so the about page or the contact page. Almost every page is one of those three. It's either a list, it's a detail in an individual one, or it's a template that isn't using a model. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, entirely. I mean, you know, almost every, not every page, but almost every page. And like some are form pages where they accept input. But
in the same way that, with time, you see that every site is, you know, 90, 95% exactly the same, which is why you have frameworks. But you also, the idea of CRUD, create, read, update, delete, that every website has basically the same functionality. You know, people don't understand that at first. And it takes a while to say, look, it's all CRUD and it's some sort of form. It's kind of it. But, you know, so that's one thing I do with people is I say, you know, I'll say, look, I'm going to tell you that all these popular sites are basically the same if you were going to prototype them, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. And then I'll walk through the models and just say, look, this is how you do it. Maybe you have a foreign key. Maybe you go crazy and you have a many-to-many with, you know, like comments on Twitter. But that's it. But I think people need to have someone break it down for them, because once you get into the details, you know, the details are hard and it becomes overwhelming. But fundamentally, the web is not rocket science. And if it is, you're probably doing it wrong unless you really know what you're doing. You know, so if you think you're being special, I would really think again, because chances are you're complicating something that's already been solved and there's a more elegant way to do it. Because again, nobody cares how complex your code is.
Yeah, no, there's that classic line as well. It's if it code's harder to read than it is to write. So
yeah.
if it's as complex code as you can possibly write, then by definition, you can't read it.
Yeah.
You can't understand it later.
Yeah, well, that leads into another area, which is views. So Django has both class-based and function-based views. I generally start with generic class-based views and then go down to a class-based view and then go to a function-based view. But I think, you know, the challenge is that when you're to truly learn how to attack the, you know, one specific method within a generic class-based view to customize it, you need to understand everything within it. So there is a, you know, you sort of start there, you go down, you need to be able to do the function-based views, but then you can, you know, more elegantly customize the generic class-based view. But that's, you know, you'll, because when people are reading tutorials or they see different things, someone will say function-based views all the way, someone else will say class-based views all the way.
Yeah.
And we'll probably do a whole episode on that. I think that elegant, easy to read code is where you want to be. And so classes, and by the way, Django is built with class-based views internally almost entirely at this point. No? Yes?
More
than function.
Probably. I mean, you know, what's internal? Like the admin.
The source code.
Yeah,
the source code. If you go to GitHub and look at the source code, it is mix-ins and class-based views.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the auth views, for instance, that kind of thing, like the password reset views, class-based, etc., like these kind of views, for me, the idea of a function-based view, like it's cleaner. It's not cleaner if by the time you're doing
it's 20 lines long. It's too much to read.
Yeah, but if it's 300 lines long because you're doing all these clever things which can be wrapped up in the generic class-based views where you just define a few things, at which point is it simpler? There's a package to mention here as well called Django Vanilla Views, which introduces class-based views, but they're a much simpler structure than the ones Django ships itself. And so they're like an alternate implementation of the class-based views. And what's nice about those is to play with them and see the structure, and you think, oh, I see the logic. And then if you map them back to Django's more powerful but more complex class-based views, it's like, oh, that makes sense.
Interesting.
I see what's going on. It's a good learning path there.
Yeah. Well, there's also classy class-based views, which we'll link to.
Yeah, that's I was just about to mention that's absolutely super resource, because, you know, if you're looking at the year index archive page, it's like, oh, well, that's got like 40 methods, and where do they come from, and what do they look like, and which ones do I have to override to customize this?
Yeah, it's too much to internalize.
Yeah, it's a super resource.
Yeah, so we'll link to that. You know, another big one is for learners is multiple ways to do the same thing. So start project, you know, when you run the start project command, if you add a period, puts it in the same directory, you'll see that different ways. Templates, you can be within the app, or you can go project level. That's confusing to people. Settings files, you know, settings files is a big one, actually, because you can, you know, how do people learn about debug mode, right? How do you learn about environment variables? You kind of move along, and then you know, you have to get bitten by that. I mean, you know, with settings files, for example, many people do what Two Scoops of Django Book advocates, which is having a local, a dev, and a production settings file, so multiple settings files, whereas I believe that today the way to do it is with environment variables. So you have one settings file, and then you have your local, or and then your staging or production variables, and so that's much cleaner.
But getting settings files in, getting environment variables into your environment when you run your app is actually quite a skill, right?
Yes. Yeah,
it's
non-trivial.
You know, for a beginner to pick that up, it's actually quite difficult. So
I agree. Yeah,
you know, separate settings files can be easier.
Yeah, I mean, you should use one, but well, and you know, the other one too is that Django is customizable. So like, I have a post I'll link to about how to do a about page three different ways, where you can put the view in the URL, you can hard code it, you can have the template. You know, that's a teaching thing that I used to show to beginners, like, look how cool Django is. And now I think it's a little bit later on, because when you're learning, you want to have guide rails. And then
definitely.
As you advance, then you sort of see, oh, I can do whatever I want with Django, actually. There's a lot of flexibility in there, but that flexibility comes at a cost to beginners. So the big advice for beginners, I think, is just try to find some good tutorials and just complete them, and know that there are some differences of opinion. But as web frameworks go, Django is actually pretty good in terms of being consistent.
there is no web framework out there which is totally simple and totally obvious, because the domain is difficult.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you can only make things as simple as the domain itself. It's a complex domain, and so there are lots of moving parts. There's no way around that.
Yeah. Let's see. Another big one with web development, and I think particularly with Django, is the user model. So this is what you use for login, logout, sign up. In Django's case, you have a lot of flexibility, but you, for example, you have to do your own sign up view and form. You can use a third-party package, like there's a bunch of them, Django AllAuth, but Django, you have to write those yourself. You know, some other frameworks just give it to you out of the box. So when you have experience, it's nice that Django lets you truly customize it. But when you're starting out, again, you know, one of my top posts is on custom user model, because that's a whole sort of mess, I would say.
I mean,
I understand, you know, it has legacy reasons, and I, you know, I'm, you know, we'll talk at some point. You know, right now you can just use the built-in user model. You can also do a profiles approach, which you use.
Yeah, well, this is what I do.
Yeah.
So I use this. So like, you can create a custom user model, but it's a lot of work, and it opens up. You end up, I've seen custom user models with 58 fields, and you're like, well, this is meant just to be for authentication. And the old-fashioned way, which I still use, is to create a one-to-one profile model which links to the user, and then put extra fields in there. And then for authentication, the user model is very minimal.
Yeah.
and then I can store whatever other fields I want on the profile model. And that works.
And do you do?
It works very well.
And by the way, and so for listeners, the reason why you would use a custom user model is so you can update the signup form. So instead of the default user email password, you could add in a name field, you could add an age, all sorts of, which typically as a project grows, you will want that flexibility. And if you do not have profiles or custom user model, it is challenging to update a Django application to do that.
Yeah. So the way, you know, if you wanted to store an age or something, not in these GDPR days, I'm not sure I would, but if you wanted to store an age, you do it on a profile model, which link, or for me, you link it one-to-one to the user model. And so extra fields just live there. And then when I want to select the user with the profile, I select the profile, but would select related on the user, and I get both at once.
Yeah. Do you know the history of why custom user model approach sort of superseded profiles in terms of the documentation at least? Because I
think people wanted custom user models. Like, it was a repeated request. People were like, I want to customize the user model. And it became, you know, it was something that was brought in for that reason. I think it was a user demand.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there's a good profiles tutorial. We'll try to find one, but I have some good ones on custom user model, and I'll link to those. Because that's another gotcha. As you're learning, you know, you.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty is that at that point, that you, before you understand what's going on, you have to create this custom user model and create this migration for it, and you have to set the auth user model setting before you've run migrate. And if you don't do that, you have to start again because.
Yeah. So if you don't set this up before you run your first migrate command, you're in a bad place, because Django will automatically link up the admin in particular, but other parts of the site, other parts of your site with whatever user model is there. So it's possible to do with profiles. It's possible to do a custom user model in just a few lines of code, but it's a complex topic. And
yeah, and like for this is one reason why I like the profile model approach is that. Yep. I can just start with the built-in user model. I just start, and then later on, when the requirements for extra fields come up, I can add them later without having to think, oh, no, now I've got to rebuild my project.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think about this a lot when I write tutorials, because it's a lot of extra steps and complexity to introduce a custom user model, but you almost always will want one. So it's, you know, I think really, I talked with online with Tom Christie about this. I wish that Django had a way to include it by default. It's something that I don't think should be really an option for people. You know, and maybe there's a way to do that with the start project command. But it's, I feel like it should probably be. What do you think, as Django fellow, about that?
Well, I'm just thinking. I'm thinking about it as you speak. You could create a template. What I actually think is just use.
Profile
contrib auth's user model, and then create a profile model with a one-to-one link to for additional fields. Like, I've been through this, and that I've come out the other side, and I go with the old school way, and I like it. And I could just be too old now, and I might get off my.
No, lawn. I see it both ways. I mean, I wouldn't say this. It's right or wrong.
You're always going to need extra fields attached to a user.
Yeah, you're going to have to do one or the other. I wish it.
When you at that point where inspiration is perishable, and at that start project point, I just want to get off the mark, and that's why I go the way I do. But there's no right and wrong here. This is the thing. This is the point for this podcast.
Right, and that's the frustrating thing for beginners. It'd be easier if there were. Or
we could talk all day about which is the right way to do user models and why I do it this way and why you do it that way. But it doesn't matter ultimately. But when you're learning. It's something else on the learning curve.
Yeah.
It's something else which makes it difficult.
It's an eject point. So I think maybe the last big topic is deployment. Well, there's testing, but that's a separate. We'll do a separate thing on that.
No, testing it definitely is. It's on deployments. It's on podcast. My word, deployment.
I mean, brief.
Yeah, this is what's good about the Django Girls tutorials. At least you get to deploy your application.
Yeah, because it does. I think it does Python Anywhere now. I believe is the one that it uses. So Django gives you a lot of flexibility. But it's sort of on you to figure out how to do deployment. You can use, I'll link to it. There's a deployment checklist that I would say most people don't know about that you can run to see things like, did you change debug? Did you do allowed hosts? A whole bunch of settings that you would want to change for a production-ready application. But really, you have your options are platform as a service, so Python Anywhere, Heroku. I believe on Replit, you can do that too. We should get them on the show to talk about it. Or
like Google Cloud Platform, Azure.
Yeah, and then your Azure, Google Cloud, AWS.
Elastic Beanstalk.
And then step from there, you have DigitalOcean, Rackspace, Linode.
But do they do platform as a service?
No. I'm sorry. I'm just saying. Then you're just. It's not a platform as a service. But if you wanted to do a deployment, you could control it.
Yeah. Okay. So then it's either put it in a virtual machine or Dockerize it if you can do that.
But do you agree with those three levels? Because I think it's like Heroku, Python Anywhere. Then you would have Google AWS Azure, and then you would have.
So the
virtual machines
like the Heroku, because Google have their app engine, which is like a platform as a service, same as Heroku, and then Azure have got app service, and Amazon have got Elastic Beanstalk. It's like a hosted runtime.
Sure, yeah.
Right, so that's platform as a service, I would call it. And then beyond that, you've got just compute. So you've got like EC2 and virtual machines in Azure and whatever Google calls them. And that would be where you're provisioning a virtual machine, and then you copy across your code somehow, you migrate your database somehow. All of these services, they now have managed Postgres instances or managed MySQL instances, which saves you a lot of effort, but you can spin up another virtual machine to run your database if you want to.
It's a big, complex thing. And as you mentioned, Postgres, so you'll often want to use a production database. So Django comes with SQLite by default, which is file-based, but you will want to use MySQL or Postgres typically, and it's better to use that locally to match what's in production, which you can set up, or you can use Docker. So this is the topic of my forthcoming book. I'm getting into all this, but this is another gotcha for people of how do I install a production database locally? How do I install, if you use something like Redis? And then, I'm in a team setting, how do I do that? The answer for many people is you use Docker, and Docker is powerful, but Docker is a beast of a program. It is deep topic. There's just levels for all this. And I think people just internalize it and forget how much there is to learn. And for a beginner, you really want them to build websites and have that feeling of deploying, getting something out there. It doesn't have to be perfect, but then have a sense of what is the roadmap of things that you add on, right? So do it in a linear fashion. That's a long-term goal of mine. And the problem is that a web framework like Django is really at the top of that pyramid of skills that I mentioned.
It's only one part. It's one part of the map.
Yeah.
But
it presumes knowledge of all the other areas. Databases, we do an entire, you can specialize in databases. But with a lot of this stuff.
Well, you can specialize in deployments, right? You can specialize in cloud infrastructures. So you can make sure that the virtual machines are in place such that you can deploy your Docker application whatever it is.
All right. So communities. So the learning Django communities, these are a little bit spread out, I would say. There is, again, I think most people aren't aware that there's a Google group for users that we'll link to. That's quite active. There's subreddits on it. What else is there? There isn't...
Stack Overflow is good.
More of like an intermediate level, I would say, Stack Overflow.
It depends on your question. You've got to ask a good question. Any of these places, like if you email the Django users Google group, you've got to try and explain your problem so that someone can help you.
Yeah.
People do, I can't deploy my application. Well, tell me something. And then... maybe I can help you.
Yeah, and there's Vitor, who writes Simple is Better Than Complex. He set up a discourse board that we'll link to that is pretty active. There's just a lot of different communities, I guess. It would be nice if there were one canonical place, but that's not where we're at. And I would say, if you're learning, Stack Overflow is fantastic. It is famously not always friendly. So if you get snide remarks, that comes from people who are experienced who... they are donating their time to teach, but they're just tired of the empathy is a little bit lacking for total beginners. So, maybe look to some of these other places. There are plenty of friendly people out there. There's Django Girls does regular conferences. There's a whole host of meetups. Provide a link to that as well, which those are fantastic. Here in Boston, there's almost every month, there's one that I've spoken at that is a wide range of people at. And you know, those, I think it helps to just see the people behind it and see that they're normal people with different backgrounds and using Django in many different ways too, which is interesting. It's not just Instagram or something. It's used in so many ways these days.
Yeah. I guess for me, the moral is just to keep going, just to take it slow and keep going. And, you know, if you get stuck, that's fine. But, you know, everybody gets stuck. Everybody.
Yes. You and I get stuck every day. Just a different level of things.
You know, like three hours, I'm pretty defeated, I'm giving up programming. Oh, there's a typo. Hang on.
Yeah. And that's a very true thing. And I've had that discussion with most of my friends who are not programmers. That's unusual as a discipline. That is truly the reality, that every day we are pushing the envelope of what we know, and we largely automate what we don't know. And so, you know, that lends to this imposter syndrome where it's not like Jiro making sushi. You know, programming is solve one problem and move on. And especially web development is very, very wide swath of things, which makes it incredibly interesting. But there are times when, right, you and I both think, like, I don't even know anything. Or, you know, why am I struggling with this thing, right? Like, And over time, what I found is I know that I can figure anything out. And I know that I've probably already figured out in the past. So even if I don't know off the top of my head, I have a vague sense of, well, this fits to this and that, and there's sort of the confidence that I can plow through it. I mean, because that's the other big thing for beginners. When I was just last week teaching a bunch of newcomers how to build a static site, people just give up easily. And I think as you get older, you get out of the learner's mindset, because it's painful and it sucks and you feel stupid. And then as a programmer, you just build up a tolerance over time. You know, I tell people, I'm like, how you feel, that's how I feel every day. For hours of my day.
And but for me, that's the fun bit of programming is like it's a job, it's work where you get paid to solve logic problems.
Yeah, you get paid to learn. It's never boring. Well, it's rarely boring.
They're hard. Yeah. And that's why it's worthwhile that you get paid. But ultimately, there are people who spend their weekends doing Sudoku.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the same kind of mental stimulus, but it's just a game, whereas programming is building something real. And it's like, wow, that can be a job.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good aptitude test. If someone is, you know, curious, would programming be for me? If you are the type that solves Sudoku or crossword puzzles.
Or anything in that whole realm.
Which not everyone does, but, you know, then you have the type of mind that you'll really enjoy programming, especially web development. Web development is really a liberal art. It's such a broad array of things that you need to do and bounce between that I think if it was taught properly, people would see how vast and interesting it is. It's not a narrow thing at all.
Well, it's like writing or printing, or, you know, it's the publication medium of today. And it involves images, and it involves sound, and it involves video, and it involves writing and graphic design and colors and fonts.
And it's everywhere. I mean, if you look at the world, you know, we both work with some companies and clients. There's so many opportunities to digitize still almost every space. And the technology piece is, you know, not the challenge, but you can replace paper and pencil. You can, you know, three ring binders, and you can just, there's so many systems around the world that can be radically improved. So with programming, you know, I think that it's better to know a little bit of programming in Django and also have some domain expertise. That's a real sweet spot. Then you're a superstar.
Yeah.
If it's just, you know, because there's so many, you know, I'm thinking of medical because I live in Boston. There's a whole bunch of medical related things. You know,
occurs in every office.
Every office. Yeah, every office, so everywhere.
If you're an office worker and you can also do like a basic blog application in Django, and like if you've gone through those three tutorials we talked about and you know those, and so you're competent, you are massively valuable in that office because you can produce applications which they can't afford to bring in a paid consultant to build, but they would really make a difference to the productivity of that team.
Right. And the management team often doesn't have the vocabulary to even have it. So it's an irony that often it's the lowest paid or valued person in a company who's in charge of the WordPress site or something, right? Who takes on the tech. Yeah. And so I guess I would encourage people, try to make the leap from WordPress to a web framework, you know, especially like Django, because it is a bit of a leap, but the power that you have is so much better. And WordPress, you know, I find WordPress overwhelming, frankly.
Yeah, but you know, if that's the move you make, from you're running the WordPress website and then you learn something like Django, all of a sudden you know Python.
Yeah.
And then from Python, you can do data analysis stuff. So you can go, oh, you know, I'm really struggling in Excel. Well, let's just pull it into Python and let's do the stats in Python using some library that you download. Ah, wow, brilliant. You can do that. And you could do automation all of a sudden, you know, little scripts which make your life easier. And all of a sudden, you've got these superpowers.
Yeah, yeah. No, and then you look at the whole world differently because things that are frustrating, you say, well, I can automate that. Or you can say, I can solve it. You know, I can be an entrepreneur. I don't have to be frustrated with something. I can build something to change it. And that's the best way to do it. Opportunities.
For me, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see. I mean, I dropped my daughter at preschool before this. You know, there are things there that are such a waste of time for talented teachers to have to do that could and will at some point be automated. And it just lets people be better at whatever they do generally. So it's an exciting time to learn web stuff, I guess is the point.
Yeah.
All right. Brilliant. Well, we've talked on.
Well, let's wrap up there. Let's wrap up. You know, we couldn't finish on a better point than that.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. You can find all this episode and others at djangochat.com and also on Twitter @chatdjango. We'll see you next time.
All right. Join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.